The Portage Health Foundation is focused on doing its part to improve the health of Baraga, Houghton, Keweenaw, and Onondagan counties. Our work is intended to increase access to education, mitigate poverty, reduce hunger and poor nutrition, build safe communities, provide access to support healthy living, support medical research and innovation, and improve physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health and well-being. We invite you to see the work we're doing by signing up for our monthly email newsletter. It's free. You can subscribe by going to phfgive.org.
Once again, good morning and welcome to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. We're brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. Learn more about them at phfgive.org. And as we get started on this Sunday morning, happy Mother's Day to all of the moms in the Copper Country. We appreciate all the good work that you are doing and the investment that you're making in our kids. Speaking of our kids, school is getting towards the end of this school year. Most of the kids have several more weeks to go yet, but as we broadcast this on Sunday morning, Memorial Day is 2 weeks from tomorrow, and high school graduation's also coming up beginning in about 2 weeks. Our seniors will be getting their diplomas. So I thought we'd catch up with what's going on in our school district with Jim Raudiola, the superintendent of the Copper Country Intermediate School District. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Todd. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Does spring, what was the analogy I saw somebody put up about trying to teach kids in May? It's always a challenge, isn't it?
It's always a challenge. April and May are just a blitz in the schools. We have testing. There's just all kinds of things that come up, and it just seems like there's never enough time in a day to accomplish what you'd like to get to.
And all of a sudden, we have nice weather like we've had for the last week or so after that trash that fell a couple of weeks ago. And the kids are distracted. They're looking out the window. They want to get out and enjoy the outdoors here in the Copper Country. So they're not fully focused, perhaps, at this point.
Absolutely. You know, the weather's been a little bit crazy here this spring with late snow days. And then today, I think it's about a 70-degree day we've seen. So it's hard for the kids and the adults to focus when it feels like we're on a yo-yo. With the weather.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise, having snow days there on the 1st of May.
Yeah, you know, what's crazy, kids and I think staff in general look forward to snow days, but as you get these late snow days in the spring, it almost feels like the kids and the staff, they just want to be in school. It's like, let's just get this done. Let's move forward to summer vacation.
Do we have to make up snow days at this point? How do we stand with that?
No, we still have one in the bank, so we're in good shape at this point.
We'll probably be all right.
I hope so.
I can remember doing school delays one day because of an ice storm on May 15th. So that is the latest since I've been in the Copper Country that we've had actual snow weather-related problems and such. So was it... because I can remember from when I was in school, and I suspect it's the same today, a lot of teachers, a lot of curriculum, there are delays, there are slowdowns, there are distractions. Teachers are probably not quite where they want to be. They're not at the end of the book yet. So it's got to be frustrating to lose a day late in the school year where you're kind of driving to get caught up and get as much of that book done, as much information out to those kids as possible.
Yeah, it gets to be difficult. And, you know, sometimes you have the advantage at the end of the year. You've covered a lot of curriculum and kids are used to learning. So you typically can get through things a little bit quicker than you can, say, in September. So they make it work.
So we've got our high school seniors are going to be getting their diplomas up in a couple of weeks. They're going to be heading on off to various colleges. Of course, the big news in the educational community here in the Copper Country over the last few months has been the closing of Finlandia University. That doesn't, I suppose, have a direct effect much on our local school districts, our K-12 districts, but there probably is some ramifications that are being felt.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's sad to see Finlandia close. It's been a staple in our community for a long, long time. There is a direct impact, especially on the CCISD. We were in partnership with Finlandia for our CTE programs. I believe we had graphic arts over there in business. So we had some programs located in their facilities. So we've had to pivot and try to find new space for those programs. So there is a direct impact on our kids and on our community. And, you know, we wish Finlandia and their employees the best as they land on their feet.
Yeah, and options exist for obviously for those Finlandia students who are already there to transfer, and for those students who had perhaps been applying to Finlandia, at least the news came early enough so that they could probably reapply or check for other options for the fall.
Correct.
It's not the only small college that is closing in the region. Presentation College in the Twin Cities is shutting down. Iowa Wesleyan University, a very old institution, is closing down. Cardinal Stritch University in Milwaukee is closing down. One of the reasons that I'm being given for this is that our high school graduation classes are somewhat smaller than they were before. There are fewer students. We are spending more time talking about career and technical education. We've made a big focus on that, and quite successfully so here in the Copper Country. Is this going to be a continuing trend, do you think? Fewer students perhaps coming out and going to colleges and causing a pinch on colleges?
You know, it's hard to say. Locally, we've been fairly stable with our student population. Across the area, you know, I can't speak for the rest of the state or other states, but I just think there's a lot more options for kids, you know, whether it's online options for schooling or CTE options. There's more available for students today than, say, maybe you and I had when we graduated. So I think it's just a culmination of everything that's available for folks today.
Things do change. The environment changes, the situations change, and options certainly have changed over the last few years. One of the things that Finlandia University used to have and actually shut down probably a dozen years or so ago was a teacher education program. They used to have an education department there. They closed that down. We have talked before about the challenges that our school districts are having finding teachers to come in, and we're not graduating a lot of teachers. Northern Michigan University, of course, has an education program. You can teach with some of the degrees you get from Michigan Tech, but it's not really a dedicated educational school. Are we a little bit short of education opportunities for teachers here in the Copper Country in terms of having, for example, a program here that could set out student teachers in the area? Or how well does Northern do with that?
Northern is a great partner. They're very easy to work with and accommodate our schools and our students, but it's still 100 miles away.
Yeah.
So there definitely is a pinch for some of our local students, and we certainly miss the Finlandia program. And I think Tech used to have a secondary education program in the math and sciences. So it would be really nice if we could get a partnership going locally for our students. There are online options for people who are interested in education, but it's really difficult to beat that face-to-face education and getting, you know, in front of kids in a classroom versus just doing everything online. There's a purpose and a place for online classes, but that human component it's really hard to replicate digitally or, you know, over a phone.
I've talked about my mom before. My mom was a second grade teacher for many, many years. And as I talked with her about teaching over the years, she says people don't understand that it's only 50% knowledge. The other 50% is controlling the classroom, managing the classroom, knowing how to keep those kids under control. You can't learn that online.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, whether it's a 50-50 coin toss of skill set versus classroom management, the reality is if you can't manage a class, you cannot teach,
yeah.
You know, because you have to be able to have control of that environment and structure it in a way that all students can learn.
Yeah, and obviously you have to know your subjects, but you don't have to be Albert Einstein to teach middle school science. You just have to have a good basic knowledge of it, but you got to be able to convey that information to those kids.
Yep, definitely have to understand your curriculum or your discipline. But if the kids aren't engaged, it doesn't matter how well a teacher understands the curriculum. If you can't engage the students, it's really hard to move the mark.
Jim, are we seeing any movement on this teacher thing? Has the shortage perhaps inspired maybe some high school seniors from the last two or three years to start on educational tracks? Maybe we've got some more in the pipeline?
You know, I'd like to say so. I really feel like this is going to be a decade-long solution just because we didn't get here overnight. You know, it took us about a decade to get here, and it's going to take us several years to get out. But, you know, for example, one of our CTE programs we've always running early childhood program, and then last year we pivoted, and it's still early childhood, but we also included education as a component of that, and I think we grew that program by 20 or 20 plus students. So I'd say that, you know, the interest is there. It's just continue beating the streets, and then we need some help with, you know, our friends in Lansing to help with school funding and whatnot to inspire people to go into it so we can pay them a living wage.
Well, and I talked with a teacher recently who we talked about that subject, and the teacher said, this was a veteran retired teacher, and said, when I got into this, I knew I wasn't going to get rich. But there was at that time a very good retirement program with excellent medical coverage once that teacher retired. And this person said, I really kind of viewed it as a trade-off that, okay, I wasn't going to get rich for 25 or 30 years teaching, but when I retired, I was going to have that there. And so that was kind of my payback. A lot of that is gone now.
It is. It's changed. I mean, there's still a decent retirement package for educators, but it's definitely has changed from, you know, 20, 25 years ago. But, you know, education's not the only field that's affected with it, but no. You're right. There's an impact, so we have to address it in a benefit package, or we have to address it in a wage, because people need to put food on the table and they need to be able to take care of their families
medically. And heaven knows all of that has gotten a lot more expensive.
Yes.
And I'm sure that that's affecting schools as well. All of a sudden, the price of food goes up 10 or 15%. The budget's pretty much shot.
Yeah, you know, you look at fuel, you look at food, you look at just about anything that you need to purchase. There's a sticker shock there. I know, you know, for ourselves, we've been trying to purchase a school bus for the last 2 years and have not been able to get one. Orders have been canceled, and you know, largely it was due to supply chain and COVID. But keeping my fingers crossed now, they're telling me that we're supposed to have two buses delivered by the end of May. So we'll see. You know, until they're in our parking lot,
yeah,
it's really hard to believe we're going to get them.
Yeah, and it's not just school buses. As I cover local village councils, city councils, and such, they're having the same kind of problem getting vehicles, trucks, things of that nature. Fire departments having the same kind of problem as well. How much does the school bus cost these days?
Well, I would say 2.5, 3 years ago, you could get a bus for right around $90,000. I think these two buses that were supposed to have show up in our parking lot at the end of May, we paid about $125 apiece. So
wow.
There's been a significant inflation on that. And, you know, the buses that we need for the Copper Country Intermediate School District, we need the wheelchair lifts, and there's a few extra bells and whistles, if you want to call that, that we need on them just to transport our students. So that comes with a little extra cost.
Okay. So when I hear the folks in Lansing crowing about how they've grown the education budget, is what they're doing growing the education budget keeping up with the demands on the education budget?
Well, we appreciate any increase that we get, you know, so
sure.
So we wouldn't want to turn our nose up at that. But we certainly haven't kept in pace with the hit that education has taken over the last decade. You know, the last couple of years in education, the education budget has looked very promising, and next year's budget looks very promising. But the reality of the situation is, if we factor in everything that occurred over the last decade, we're probably not even net neutral of where we ought to be.
So we can talk to our legislators and encourage them to do more.
We can try.
Our kids are our greatest resource. They have to be our greatest investment.
Yeah. You know, and I have to say, we have a great relationship with our legislators, you know, Representative Markkanen and Representative Jen Hill and Senator McBroom. They get it. And they're fighting hard for the folks of the Copper Country. But we're just a small piece of the puzzle, and we all have to work together, because the education budget impacts every district across the state of Michigan.
Absolutely. Jim Rowdiola is the superintendent of the Copper Country Intermediate School District. Let's talk about the summer coming up, because the kids will not be in school in probably several weeks. Although they'll all be out and running around and playing around. Summer used to be almost a complete time off for schools. It's not anymore, is it?
No, there's a lot of programming out there that students and families can get involved with.
What kind of things should parents be looking at in terms of maybe summer classes or tutoring or things of that nature if they look at the kid's report card and say, hey, you could be doing better?
Well, you know, it really varies from district to district across our region, but I would say all of our schools offer some sort of a summer school, you know, and oftentimes it's for the lower grades, you know, to shore up the reading and the math and the science. But there are some programming for older kids also.
There has been great controversy in Lansing about this law that was passed some years ago saying that kids needed to be flunked if they didn't pass the third grade reading test. And I think now that have they now thrown that out?
I believe going into next school year, that will be rescinded.
Yeah, but it's still important that our kids are up at reading level. I'm not sure that an artificial barrier like that was the way to approach it. But how do we make sure that our kids do get to that level? Now that we're kind of, you know, kids coming to the end of the second grade here, if you can't read at a third grade level, you're not going to understand the third grade stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult. And, you know, there's no educator that would dispute the importance of reading. We all know how important reading is. But there's also literature out there that shows that retention doesn't necessarily assist that student either. So the reality of the situation is most of the students will learn to read, they'll learn to read well, and there's going to be that select population that are going to struggle, and it's our job as educators to meet them where they're at, provide an individual plan, you know, with the teacher, with the support staff, with the parents, and try to get that student the resources they need to help them develop into a great reader.
That is certainly something that's different than when I was in school. I'm old now at this point. But back in those days, it was very much a cookie-cutter approach. Everybody took the same class. Everybody used the same book. Everybody studied the same thing. Everybody was expected to do equally well. Kids aren't built that way.
No. The education system has had to pivot. You know, I would say when you and I went to school, it was probably more rote memorization, whereas with
flashcards.
But with technology today, I mean, literally in a couple of seconds, you can find whatever information you're looking for. So really the challenge has been, you know, not so much the memorization piece, but just teach kids how to learn, you know, and it doesn't matter what vessel or vehicle or medium you use to do that. But if you can instruct kids on how to learn, you know, along with the reading and the writing and the math that goes along with it, we're just putting tools in their toolbox because we don't know what their future looks like when they graduate from high school or what the job market may be, you know, 5 to 10, 20 years out from now. But if we're successful in teaching students how to learn, it won't matter what the job market looks like because they'll pivot and they'll just adapt to whatever the needs of society are in that moment.
Yeah, I think it's very safe to say that the knowledge base that they graduate from high school with now or even college is going to be severely outdated within a decade.
You know, learning is learning. You know, so there's, I guess, a difference between memorizing for knowledge and then having the ability to find or seek what you need. So I feel like if we do our jobs and we do them correct, students will have the tools that they need to be successful.
Yeah, I was bemused the other day. I think somebody in Lansing introduced a bill to require the teaching of cursive writing again in schools. Do we teach cursive in the Copper Country? Do you know?
To a point. It varies from school to school. But I would say the cursive writing thing, it was very real and it was in every classroom probably up until, I don't know, a decade, 7-8 years ago.
Penmanship.
But now everything that we do is we type, you know.
Yeah.
So we'd be doing our students a disservice if we didn't teach them how to type. So there's a place for cursive writing, but there's also a place for learning how to type. But what is interesting is you'll see a lot of, let's say, teenagers coming up through and they're asked to sign their name. And a lot of them don't necessarily know how to sign in cursive writing, but the other piece of that is so many of the documents that we sign, we're signing electronically. So
yeah,
there's a place for everything, and we're just going to have to find a happy median and make it work.
Because as I was thinking about that a while back, I thought, you know, it's really been ages since I have actually sat down and written something in cursive besides my signature. Either I'm typing it on my laptop or I'm thumbing it out on my phone or I'm printing it, because that seems to be the most effective way for me to get it done anymore.
Yeah, correct.
The whole concept, and I look back at letters written back in the 19th century, this beautiful handwriting, this wonderful penmanship, and I think that's a lost art at this point, and I don't think it's ever going to come back.
No, probably not. You know, and technology shifts so fast, you know, and you look at all the AI that's coming out, you know, something as simple as spell check. We as humans probably don't place as much value on spelling as, you know, say they did 20, 30, 40 years ago, because as we're typing on our computer, we see a blue line, we see a red line, we click on it, and we select the word that we need. So we just have to adapt. And, you know, it's important to be able to spell. It's important to be able to write. It's important to be able to articulate in communication. But the reality of it is we have to adapt as we move forward.
Is some of this AI becoming a problem for schools? I read about, you know, kids using AI apps to write term papers and things of that nature. Are we seeing that at the high school level now?
I think it's starting to bleed in. But, you know, if we go back to earlier in the conversation where we said we're teaching kids how to learn, there's a place for AI. And the educators are just going to have to adapt on what are they trying to get out of the lesson. Are we trying to get a well-written paper to make sure that it was the student's writing? Or are we trying to have the students write a paper on a subject and then have them present to show what they learned, you know, from it? So we're just going to have to adapt and chase it, or it's going to run us over.
Yeah. Does it make it more challenging to ascertain that the student has really absorbed the information as opposed to just typing in a little bit of search and commands and such and having something produced for them?
Certainly makes it more difficult. But it still goes back to the teacher in the classroom figuring out, what do I want this student to learn? Somebody will always find a way around.
Cliff's Notes. We had Cliff's Notes.
Yep.
I remember buying Cliff's Notes, and they were very helpful. Although I will confess that I was one of those guys who also did read the book. So I didn't cheat that way.
And, you know, I love to read too, and I'm sure that AI has a place in my life, and I use it for certain things, but I also grew up in a world, as well as you did, that, you know, we got to feel what a book felt like, and we got to spend our time reading, and I've never lost that. And there's still that love of reading that's part of society, too, and I don't believe our students are going to lose that, whether they're reading off a screen or they're going to the library checking out a book. I mean, reading is still reading, and that love is still there.
One of the things that has happened to school districts over the past generation is that they have become much more than schools. Many families rely on school for breakfast for their kids, for lunch for their kids. And that has now expanded outside of the school year. I'm getting some notes from local school districts indicating that here's how you get your meals for the summer for the kids, and that this kind of help is available for families, particularly low-income families, to make sure that those kids get fed appropriately through the summer. Has this become a real burden for schools, or has additional resources been appropriated by the state to cover the cost of this?
Well, when we got hit with COVID, and I hate to even go back to that, but schools had to pivot because there was free lunch, and the state was providing free lunch, and actually all of our schools during that time of the shutdowns, we delivered lunches to homes and to families. So then there was a period of time when we were back in school where lunch was free again, breakfast was free for the year. And that was, in my opinion, a real help for the districts and the families, because you could choose to have lunch if you wanted lunch, or you could pack your own if you did not. And then with COVID kind of falling by the wayside, that school lunch program fell away, where families were required to pay for it again, and districts were on the hook for certain things. There has been some talk in Lansing to go back to free student lunch and, you know, have some of that reimbursed back. So we'll see where that goes. But certainly with the cost of food and the cost of everything going up, there's a burden. There's a burden for families. There's a burden for schools. And you know, quite frankly, none of our students should have to go hungry.
Malnourished kids among other things, don't learn well.
Correct.
They have other problems too, but in terms of the educational system, malnourished kids, a hungry child doesn't pay attention in class.
No.
And that counts through the summer as well, and I would encourage any family who is challenged with this, contact your local school to find out what programming they have set up for the summer, because they're all different. But contact your local school and don't be afraid to ask, because the programs are being put in place to help.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I'd like to give a shout out to 31 Backpacks too, because they do a great job, you know, during the school year and whatnot, meeting the need of the food insecurity.
We've got to wrap things up. Jim Rautiola from the Copper Country Intermediate School District. Hopefully a good end to the school year and maybe at least a little bit of a relaxing summer for you and many members of the staff.
Yeah, thank you for having me.